right, it's time for y'all to get on in here. I know y'all standing around talking about how much rain you got, what kind of wheat you have planted, the new bowl you bought, whatever. Farmer Rancher Chat. I always imagine this as being like, you know, a small country parish. It's time to gather the congregation together for this episode of the Parish of the Patriots, the 226th gathering of the Parish of the Patriots. Before we get rolling, as always at the beginning of the show, remind everybody I've got my links here for Sven Longshanks, where you can send snail mail. There's Give, Send, Go. We've got the prison website link there. And there's an option there, by the way, on the prison website where you can sign up for email a prisoner. You got to use your real name and whatnot. If some of y'all, I don't know, worried about that, then it's whatever. But the option is there. I've signed up for it. And honestly, it doesn't seem much faster than the snail mail. I think the prison probably has like one poor person there that has to read through all the stuff because it's going to be slow hearing back. One way or the other. I did want to pass on to y'all before we get rolling too far. I have heard from Sven. I've gotten a couple snail mail letters from him. Like I said, I've sent off an email. It's been over a week now and I haven't heard anything back because it's got to be read by the prison personnel. So you're not going to get like an instant response one way or the other. It was like over a month before I got, you know, Sven's first letter, but I have heard from him. I did want to pass on to you that he, all things considered, I mean, obviously he's in prison. But all things considered, he's doing well, and I think it speaks to the fortitude and the character of the man that he's doing as well as he has. So I am grateful for that, and I did want to pass that on also. You know, he has been receiving a lot of different y'all's letters, and he is just, he's blown away by the amount of support, the outreach, that all of y'all have done. It means a lot. I said it speaks to the fortitude, but part of that is y'all and y'all that have supported and reached out and taken the time to write him and let him know he's not alone. One of the whole purposes of prison is to isolate somebody and make them to feel alone. And you can overcome that, help them overcome that rather by sending letters and whatnot. And again, there's any number of ways you can write letters. There's that email option. And of course, Give, Send, Go. You can send support that way in the Patriotic Alternative link. They show how they give, how you can send like snail mail donations through the to a Patriotic Alternative. Just note that it's for Sven. They give an address for all of that. So I encourage you to do that. I mentioned this on yesterday's Daily Nationalist show. I'm just house sitting here. I'm changing very little. If you're house sitting for somebody, you don't rearrange their furniture, paint the walls a different color, anything like that. So I'm very minimal amount of things on the site. For one thing, because of that. And the other thing is because I'm really not smart enough to figure it out. And I don't really want to put the effort in to figure it out anyway. And I don't feel like I should be changing things around. I'm just trying to keep things together until Sven gets back. That having been said, down at the very, very bottom of these shows, you know, there's links for like Bitcoin and Ethereum. And it says we can now take donations. That was put up by Sven before he went to jail. And if you send money or if you do send money to that, it's all well and good. But just understand he can't access that. No kidding. But he can't access that, obviously, until he gets out. I mean, it's fine that you send it there because it's not going anywhere. It'll be there for him when he gets out. But if you choose to do that, just remember, he can't access that. I can't access that. So it has, you know, that doesn't, I'm not getting my hands on it one way or the other either. It's just going to sit there. So just understand. And the reason I'm not removing those is because he put them there in the first place. And again, I'm just not changing a bunch of stuff on the site. This show is supported by you, the listeners. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. For me personally, if you get something out of the show, drop something in the plate, look through the description page. And right there, I've got how to send tithes. I've got snail mail. I got Bitcoin, got Monero, got my email address there where you can drop your notes. Anything you give, believe me, it's very, very much appreciated. With that having been said, let us partaketh into the listener supporter mailbag. Dear GPD, thanks again for holding the fort at Radio Albion. Best wishes. And that's from James in the UK. Thank you very much, James. I'm doing what I can. And again, I've had people say, you know, well, you know, talking about I've taken up, you know, running the network. Well, I mean, I've taken up posting our content and trying to keep things limping along. I am trying to basically hold the fort until he gets here. Like, again, I'm trying to change as little as possible. Obviously, some things are changing. You know, I spend Longshanks doing the Daily Nationalist. You have to suffer through me doing it on Mondays and Fridays. Dr. Johnson's doing a great job on the Thursday Daily Nationalist, soloing his way through. And I know from experience how much more difficult it is to do these things solo versus having somebody to bounce back and forth. And of course, both Matt Johnson and myself, we've worked with Sven so long, it's just an automatic thing. It's so easy to go back and forth. But we're all doing the best we can. And again, I'm just getting content up. There's a lot of things that don't work on the site anymore. You know, I know this. I'm aware of certain features on the site that are basically buggy because I'm not updating them. I'm just posting shows up. I'm just trying to keep everything going along. I'm hopefully the Lord will bless us with Sven getting out sooner rather than later. And then he can mess with us again and he can rearrange, you know, and do things however he wants. He could probably gonna look at the way I've been doing things and be like, man, I appreciate the way you've been doing this, but it's not really right. And it'll probably drive him crazy. He'll probably go back and fix all the little details that I didn't do. But anyway, that is how it is. So anyway, I do appreciate all the support. I really do. Dear GPD, please find enclosed this support. I'm not mentioning dollar amounts here because I don't believe in that. Anyway, may I ask you to forward this certain portion to Sven? You are correct to ask for donations for each show. I can cite verse 6:6 of the Epistle of Galatians. Those who are taught the word of God should help their teachers by paying them. Please let me know if you receive the money. Well, obviously, this is my way of letting you know. Also, please find enclosed an essay titled Daniel 9 through 11 announces three key moments: Constantine around 300, Hitler around 1950, and the Great Tribulation around 2055. This is from an agent from a rediscovered Philadelphia. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And finally, Mr. T, GPD, I take comfort in the thought that if and when white people 50 years from now are reduced to living in small enclaves in North Russia or Alaska, that at least the Asian people will be masters of the earth and they won't tolerate the BS that whites have from all of these others. Just a thought, Mr. T. Well, you know, things have a tendency to work out and we don't know how these things. We can't become fatalistic. I'm not saying that's what you're saying here, Mr. T, but I mean, it is important, I think, to be on our guard, not to be fatalistic about things. You know, it's easy to look around. We're around the West today, the world today, and say, you know, white people are doomed. Well, yeah, if the trajectory of things continues, white people are kind of doomed as a race. But that's on the flip side of that, I don't think this trajectory is sustainable. Are we going to wind up with a culling? I do. I think that. And I don't say that, you know, to the haters, aka shitlibs, they always try to reframe everything you say as some sort of threat of violence. See, he said he's going to start culling, but that's not what I said. I said, we're looking at a culling coming. In other words, what I mean by that is I look around this country and there's a whole lot of, and I'm just specifically talking about white people here, there's a whole lot of very weak white people. And when things get very difficult, again, the trajectory on this is not sustainable. We're going to hit the wall here. We're going to crash at the bottom of the cliff and things are going to get very hard. Now, I'm not saying things are going to be like Mad Max Thunderdome, weird or difficult, but we're looking at very difficult times. And these weak people they're not going to make it. And when I say they're not going to make it, I think a lot of them are going to kill themselves. I really do. I think when these people who have surrounded themselves and live in this bubble of this fake reality, I think when that, you know, and they demand that others be censored so that their reality, their fake reality they've created for themselves, this fantasy world they've created themselves that they live in, they don't want that challenged in any way, shape, or form because they have this negative emotional reaction to that. That's why they demand everybody's censored. If everybody's censored, then they can live in their fantasy world and demand everybody goes along with the fantasy as well. When reality comes in and bitch slaps them and pops their bubble and they have no choice but to face reality, I think they won't face reality. I think there's a lot of them that will off themselves. I do. There's a lot of weak, weak people. And there's going to be a culling. They're going to be culled out. Let me put it this way. Depending on how things, when times get difficult, I'll spit it out here. When times get difficult, a lot of your ability to move forward is your ability to do things. If you go to your neighbor and need something, he's going to be like, well, what can you do for me? Well, I can fix your car. You can work something out. You know, if you have, the more you know how to do, actually do things, the more you're going to have a chance that you can work with other people and get through those hard times because you're bringing something to the table, something real. If that problem you've got, you're trying to fix this little machine, I can help you with that. And then we can both benefit from that. That's what hard times are going to be looking like. When you go to your neighbor and they say, well, I'm a journalist. If you're a journalist or you got some made up college degree in gender studies and racism, you ain't bringing nothing to the table. If you know how to pour up coffee at Starbucks and that's the limit of your ability of what you know how to do, you're going to be in for a hard time. Because when times are tough, ain't nobody going to have no time for no charity and be no daddy government to run around and take care of you. That's what hard times mean. That's what I mean. They're going to be a culling. There's a lot of weak people and they're going to fall by the wayside. But ultimately, that makes the people that remain stronger. So again, we can't be fatalistic. We don't know how any of this plays out. One thing I do with this show, the primary thing I do with this show, you'll have people and they're frustrated and they'll talk about, you know, somebody needs to do something. Why doesn't somebody do something? And nobody will ever tell you what something is. People are frustrated because everybody look around and realize that somebody needs to do something. Because we're going to hell in a handbasket fast. Why doesn't somebody do something? But nobody can ever seem to define what that something is. People always wind up putting their hopes in some kind of messianic figure. You know, Trump. Trump's going to save it. We get Trump back in there, he's going to fix everything. I don't think it matters who's in the White House. I mean, it matters in the sense that, you know, obviously things have spiraled faster under the senile puppet president that was installed versus Trump. But, it's not like the trajectory turned around under Trump either. It was accelerated when he was removed from office. But while he was there, things continued on. Well, this show, one of my goals with this show, overarching goals, is the something. We're doing something. And people will say that, argue, and they look, you ain't doing nothing. You're just doing this show. But we are. And if nothing else, people, we're working on the understanding that you don't control other people. And by that, you don't control these bigger issues. You don't control other people. And I know I sound like a broken record, and I apologize for that. But people have to get that in their head. When you see people that lose touch with reality, a lot of times it's because they look at the world around them that's so messed up and they want to fix it and they want to change it. And this is something we as men are driven to do. We're fixers. That's why we don't do well listening to women yammer on about their problems. And then the women gets mad because we tell them, well, what you need to do.
Don't tell me what I need to do.
Well, why are you telling me then? If you don't want me to tell you how to fix it, then don't waste my time. Then she mad. We're fixers. But the problem with that is you look around and you can't fix it because fixing it would entail having some kind of control over what other people do. You got to wrap your mind around the only person you have control over is yourself. So if you're going to do something, then you've got to focus on what you can do. And that is yourself. And Sven was very adamant about this. and continues to be, I'm sure. But while he was here, able to do these shows, this really became the focus, I would say, of Radio Albion as a whole, not just this show. And Sven and I, obviously, we did multiple shows together. And, you know, before those shows and after those shows, we would visit and discuss things and just, you know, have a regular conversation with one another. And our views were very much lined up on this, is getting people to understand what they can change. And what you can change is yourself. That is what you have control over. People mock that and say, oh, well, you just not doing it. You just talking. And no. If you can do something, people always thought you got to do something, but there's no point in undertaking something that you can't do. If you want to stop a truck and you run out in front of it and put your hands up, you're just going to be a big splatter on the grill. You're trying to do something that you can't do. You cannot control. And it's just as pointless stepping out in front of a truck. It's just as pointless thinking you can control other people and change what they're doing, somehow force them to do what you want them to do. Until you really wrap your mind around that, you're always going to be in frustration. When you understand what you can do, what you do have control over is yourself, your own decisions that you make, then you can start doing something. And it does matter in the big picture because, you know, if enough people stop chasing after the bullshit of this world and start fixing themselves. One of the reasons everybody all crazy, because everybody's running around. Most people, they're chasing money. They're chasing this. They're chasing that. They're chasing a nicer car. They're chasing whatever. Getting laid. Whatever these things people are chasing. And they've abandoned everything that mattered. Imagine you're supposed to be tending a field, and instead of tending the field, you run off to town and spend the next 6 months drunk and laying up with whores. And then 6 months goes by and you go back to the field and you're just shocked that the crops are dead. Well, you ain't been tending to what you're supposed to. If enough people will tend to and do what they're supposed to do as far as their own behavior, if enough people collectively, you have control over yourself. That's you, one individual. You have control. And Matt Johnson points this out. There's no such thing as the masses. They're all these individual peoples. And yes, collectively, you can see them move in a certain way. If enough individual people, you start focusing on the things that matter and start improving yourself, if you quit chasing after the bullshit that's being dangled in front of you and start focusing on the things that matter and refusing to be drug off by this, and we're going to get into this a little more as we go, then you're not going to fall for the stuff that they want you to fall for. You're going to say, well, I'm not doing that. When they come up to you and say, hey, take this ticket. Hey, go do this. Hey, do this. And you're going to say, no, I'm not. No, thank you, but no, thank you. You as an individual, but all these other individuals will also start doing that. Then what? Guess what? You have a group of people now that aren't going along with the program. Voila. If that group gets large enough, it changes things. Everybody wants... you heard me bump the mic. I'm sorry. It's because I started to sling my pen down and I didn't have enough room to do it. And like, y'all are going to see that. If enough people will quit going along with the program, everything will stop. Now, look, everybody wants a damn shortcut. Everybody. That's why everybody wants some political figure, some Donald Trump, somebody to come to the top and fix everything for us. Everybody wants a shortcut. We can get here by a shortcut. This was a step-by-step. You can look back through history. Most of you have. Look back over, say, the last 80 years, last 100 years. It doesn't matter how far back you want to go. And you can see. You got all the, well, I say you can't, because I have faith in you, the listeners. Your average normie can't see that. Your average person who just goes about chasing this different stuff that's laid out before them that they're told is so important, they don't get it. They look around all of a sudden and the house is on fire and they're like, how did we get here? It's because Joe Biden is a doddering moron. I don't understand. But you understand. You look back and understand, this is just critical mass. Now it's so out of control that, yeah, the brain dead daughter people chasing around the latest thing, it's undeniable even to them now. Now they can't ignore it. They've been ignoring it for 80 years. They've been ignoring it for 50 years, 40 years, however long you decide to personally go back and look. They've been, now they can't ignore it. Now the walls have closed in, the walls of insanity, everything's gotten so stupid. Now they can't ignore it, and now they're running around going, oh my gosh, somebody's got to fix this. But you know, and I know, this is a step-by-step process. This is where we're at now, started many, many years ago, generations ago. This is where we have gotten. This is the end result of all those decisions that different people made. The collectivity of the collective decisions, the accumulation of the collective decisions individual people made, they got big enough to a critical mass, and voila, here we are. We understand that. And there ain't no shortcut. It was a step-by-step thing that got us here. And guess what? It's going to be a step-by-step thing getting back out. So what can you do? Somebody needs to do something. People that weigh along. I do. That is something. Don't be coming at me with that shit. Really, I've had people come at me with this. Somebody needs to do something. What is the something? Pray tell. And if somebody so urgently needs to do something, then whatever that you obviously have in mind what the something is, then why the hell aren't you the somebody? You need, that's what they usually mean. You need to go fix this somehow for me. Nope. Not doing it. I got control over myself. I don't got control over anybody else. I can't make nobody else. I can sit here and have these discussions with y'all. I can't control what y'all decide to do. I try to help y'all out and share truths that I understand and know, especially in the Christian specific segment. I can do that. That's it. That's all I can do. I can't control other people. That's doing something. Nobody wants to do that because that requires efforts on their part. I say nobody, but you know what I'm saying. No, that requires effort. Sitting around going, somebody else needs to fix all of this for me, that doesn't require any effort. Only way you're going to fix anything is to do what you can do, which means, yes, you have to put in the work. Oh, nobody wants to do that. We need to elect somebody that'll go in here and fix it. I got other things to do. I don't know. It's one of the things I see just looking about at the world today is how people are so driven by emotion. And I think this is something really, we talk about, if you don't listen to the Christian specific segment, you're missing out. But I mean, there's something we discuss a lot in the Christian specific segment. But people as a whole are so driven by emotionalism. Now, this is a normal state, and I'm not being insulting here, but this is a normal state for women to be in. This is why traditionally women aren't given a say in political matters. This is why the Bible says women aren't allowed to even speak in church. Why? Because if they open, not because you're being mean and oppressive to women, it's because if a woman opens her mouth, she's going to spout out a bunch of emotional gibberish, and nobody got time for that. We're trying to learn about the Lord. This is a natural state for women to be driven by emotion. That's why it's insane to have women political. Look at these ridiculous European countries that have all these women running. You know, she's the defense minister for some podunk European country that nobody cares about. Yeah, she's going to make really good decisions about. I can tell this dumb bitch is going to really come up with some brilliant war strategy. This is traditionally, emotionalism is traditionally reserved to women, and that's part of their natural. Well, really, I'm being funny about it, but I'm not being insulting. That's just the nature of women. And in all honesty, it's part of what balances us out. If relationships between men and women were normal, this is part of what kind of, because that emotionalism and the way women are kind of helps temper the way men should normally be. Now, what's absurd and out of control is, well, aside from the fact that women have political power, which is stupid, but you have so many men that are driven by emotion. That's their motivation. That's what lights a fire under them. They're driven by emotion. Now, look, you're going to feel emotions. You're not a robot. I get that. But it's a different thing. You are supposed to control your emotions, not your emotions control you. That's the difference. And you see a lot of men now, and they run around, and they're controlled by emotion. And you may not understand that. You may say, he's a manly man. Look, if some guy gets road rage, slams on his brakes, jumps out in the middle of the road and goes at somebody else in a car carrying a baseball bat to go bash their windshield in because he's pissed off because they have somehow slighted his manhood on the highway. That's not toxic masculinity. That's feminine emotionalism. I mean, yeah, that is a spirit of the woman manifesting itself in a man. A man should have control of his emotions and not be like going off the rails. You hear these stories, and then somebody gets, you know, the road rage, and somebody feels slighted on the highway. There was a case here years ago where somebody got into one of these deals, and I don't know, somebody, they didn't like the way somebody was driving, and because they're mad and they want somebody, you know, people around so tight, and they want to control how that person drives. Regardless of what you do, they're going to drive like shit anyway. You might as well just chill with it. And they had this back and forth cutting each other off. And the guy winds up getting mad and waving a gun out the window at them. Police chase him down, throw him in jail. And I always think when you read about stories like that, I always think when that person wakes up in jail the next day and they're no longer angry, they must really, really feel stupid. You know, it's like, oh shit, now why did I do that? Not only didn't get me to my destination any faster, now I can get to my destination. No, I had a new destination. The Iron Bar Hotel. The Pokey. The Hooskow. It's the spirit of a woman. When you see these deals and people jump up and they just, somebody says something they decide they didn't like, and they emotionally jump up and wave a gun out the window of their car, jump out with a baseball bat to smash somebody's windshield in. That's not. You have the feminine, toxic masculinity. No, it's not. That's the spirit of a woman manifesting itself in a man. You're going to feel emotions. You're not a robot. But you're supposed to be in control of your emotions. When somebody does something like that, their emotions are controlling them, and they're just running wild like a woman. They just, where a woman might just get mad and scream and throw a dish, a man's going to jump out and grab a baseball bat and smash somebody's window. It's the same spirit, though. It's the spirit of the woman. You ain't being no macho masculine man. You look like a fool. You're a fool not able to control yourself. Now, again, you're going to feel emotions. But you have to understand, you have to apply. And bear with me, I'm not going to start preaching here. But you have to apply your logical mind along with the trajectory of your spiritual nature as a Christian believer. And I'm not preaching early, but I have to touch on that part of it. See, people think like your logical mind and using your mind and your logical mind, that's somehow counter to faith in God, and it's not. They're actually, those two have to work together. I'm not even going to get into that in the Christian specific segment this week, but there's something I probably should do. And I'll forget all about it after today and wind up not talking about it. But you have to use your logical mind in conjunction with your spiritual trajectory, your spiritual nature, to make correct decisions. You're going to feel emotions. Don't go lying to yourself and acting like you don't feel emotions. Of course, you're a human being. You're going to feel emotions. But as a man, those emotions shouldn't control you. I ain't going to tell a woman her emotions shouldn't control you. You got to do the best you can. But by your very nature, those things have more sway over you. You can't help it. It's just by your nature because of your estrogen and things that you have no control over. You can, you know, I mean, do the best you can. Don't act like a hysterical bitch all the time. But I mean, you know, I'm talking about men here. You're going to feel emotions. You've got to corral those things. And the best way to corral those things is to say, okay, hold on a minute. This guy just cut me off in traffic and I'm really getting pissed off. But wait a minute. Let me apply my logical mind here. What am I doing here? I'm trying to get down here to, I don't know, Costco or wherever the hell you're going. And then get back home. How am I going to do this in the most efficient manner is ignore this guy and get over to where I'm going and go home. Corral that emotionalism up. That person doesn't even know who you are. It's not a personal disrespect of you because they don't even know who you are. It's a disrespect if they know who you are and they get in your face or something. They don't know who you are. They may not have even done that on purpose, like as a front to you. They don't know you personally. They just can't drive worth a shit. Get over it. Corral those emotions up and use your logical mind and say, wait a minute. Let's keep things in check here. Getting angry because this person can't drive worth a crap isn't going to make them drive any better. It isn't. They're going to still drive. That person is going to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing as somebody else because they just can't drive worth a crap. I look around people. I use that illustration because I look around and people don't drive anymore. The vast majority of people don't drive anymore. They go from point A to point B in a vehicle, but that ain't driving. They ain't paying no attention. They're in another world. They expect everybody to get out of the way. They do stupid stuff all the time, nonstop. Look, they ain't driving. And you getting mad about it ain't going to change. Can't change any of that. This very much ties into what we're talking about earlier because I was talking about, you know, improving yourself. And that sounds good. You hear somebody, I'm not the only one to say that. People say, you got to work on improving yourself. But what does that even mean? Look, if you want some concrete, I'm laying it out for you, concrete things you can do to improve yourself. And one of the number one things you can do, man, as a man, is start getting a hold of your emotions and start corralling that. That's what you're supposed to do. Again, you're going to feel them, but they're not supposed to control you. You control them. If you make an emotional decision, it's usually going to be a bad one. You can take that to the bank. There's a reason, like if you go to buy like a new car, you go to a car lot, they're going to get you in that test drive because they want you to get emotionally attached. And what are they going to say? 9 times out of 10, I can guarantee if you go down to a car lot, car dealership, you're looking at a car. At some point early on in the conversation, the salesperson is going to ask you, what's it going to take to get you to buy this car today? They want some kind of commitment. What will it take? What will it take for you to buy this car today? Because they're trying, anytime somebody's trying to rush you into and saying you've got to make it, they're trying to get you to commit to making a decision today. They're trying to make you get you in a position to make a decision that is not going to be to your benefit. A decision you make in the middle of emotion 99% of the time is not going to turn out well. It is. It's not going to turn out well. You're better off telling that car salesman, I ain't buying a car today. I might come back and buy one next week. I'm trying to make up my mind. I'm trying to look. But I'm not buying a car today. And they're going to try to cajole you and cajole because they want you to make an emotional decision. They don't care after you sign that paper. They don't care if you wake up the next day and go, crap, why did I agree to that? I can't afford these payments. They don't care about that. They done got their money. If nothing else, as a man, what you can do to improve yourself is start learning to control your emotions. Don't deny them because that's just suppressing your emotions. That's a different thing. Suppressing your emotions is I don't feel anything, but you actually do. Lies will always lead you to a bad place. You always got to be truthful. Confront these things head on. A lot of things are related to emotionally. We've got to get into the Christian specific segment. I need to wrap this up. But a lot of things we don't realize are related to emotionalism is emotionalism. Because they don't make logical sense. You keep going back to pornography over and over again. But you know that's bad for you. That doesn't make logical sense. But why are you doing it then? If you're not doing it as part of your logical thinking mind, then it's being driven by some form of emotion. You got to use your logical mind to figure out why. Well, then why am I doing that? Your counter to this emotionalism is to use your logical mind. Now, as a Christian believer, you couple that with your spiritual trajectory, with your faith in God and understanding the Lord, and you put that context around it and you work those two things together and it works together. We're not in the Christian specific segment, so I'm not focusing on that right now, but that's where you find success. But all of that having been said, even if you bound and determined that you want to go to hell, and that's none of my business, you know, at least apply your logical mind. If you apply your logical mind, that will at least get you maybe a little closer to not being run around. Because if you're making emotional decisions, you can always be manipulated. You hear about people that get duped into taking part in these stupid FBI stings and they get rounded up. How did they get in that position? Because they allowed themselves to make emotional-based decisions. If they were using their logical mind, they would go, well, this looks like a trap. This looks like a really stupid, bad idea. But see, they allow themselves, if you're making emotional decisions, you can be manipulated by the media. You can be manipulated by people around you, whether they're intentional bad actors or just family members or friends that want to manipulate you around to do things for them that are not in your best interest. But they want to manipulate because you're driven by emotion. If you're driven by emotion, you can always be manipulated, and you will time and time and time again find yourself frustrated because you're going to find yourself in a place in life that you don't want to be. And then the pitfall is you start blaming everybody else. I don't like where my life is, and it's everybody else's fault. See, that's another emotional reaction. You're bitter and angry. It's everybody's fault that my life sucks. No! Your life is what it is because this is the result of the collective decisions you have made thus far. Yes, actions of other people also influence your life, but mostly where you are in life is because of the collective decisions you have made. Get rid of the emotion and quit blaming everybody else. Your life sucks. It's because of the decisions you've made. You can fix it. You still got some life left. Start making different decisions. Stop being driven by emotion. We need to get into the Christian specific segment. Time, I could just go on and on sometimes. And then other times it's like, I don't know how I'm going to feel this hour. This is one of them great weeks. I feel as though we could go on. Enjoying, but we got to keep going. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. Encourage you to listen, but that is up to you. Either way, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. It's been often said, and I've heard it my whole life, and probably all of you have as well, that the Lord will not give us more than we can handle. We will not have more burden, more suffering than we can handle. But is that true? It's kind of more of an old saying than a biblical thing. The closest thing I believe you're going to find, I mean, I know there's Psalms about, you know, the Lord helping with your burdens and things such as this. As far as in the New Testament, the closest thing you'll find is in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, Paul writes, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." So we've heard that the Lord will not give us more than we can bear. We'll not have, and people will cite this a lot of times when somebody, they see somebody who's suffering, for instance, with the loss of a loved one, or they're having like job difficulties and financial difficulties, and they'll say, you know, keep the faith. God will not give you more than you can bear. But again, is that true? We always want to seek the truth of the Lord, and we want to understand Him because this is what strengthens us, what shores us up. Likewise, we want to understand these things because if it seems that that is not the case, we don't want our faith, we don't want to be tempted that our faith, we may stop walking in our faith, or our faith may start to stumble. I believe that a lot of sayings that were given, you know, I believe that a lot of things that become sayings that are handed down are truthful. For instance, as there's nowhere in the Bible where it specifically says the good Lord helps those that help themselves. That's a saying that's passed down. But nonetheless, I do believe it's true, and I believe that's why it's had staying power, and it's one of those things that's handed down. I believe that while it's not specifically said, I do believe that it's backed up by the Bible, that we do have to put the effort in. If people have, and you see this in the evangelicals, they'll have this idea that they're just going to sit around and do nothing and wait for God to handle it. And that's simply not the way it works. The whole entire New Testament, you read about the suffering of the apostles and whatever, they were constantly doing. They were constantly working. They were constantly, you know, trying to figure out what they were supposed to be doing as a part of God's will. We do have work to do as part of our maturing process. And again, you'll have these people that think, well, I'm just going to sit back and let God handle everything. Thus is reflected. It's true that the good Lord helps those that help themselves. You keep moving forward, you keep pushing forward, and God opens up doors. He opens up opportunities and things such as that for us. Now, when people hear that the Lord will not give us more than we can bear, they'll look around, you know, and say, well, obviously that's not true. Because some people are given more than they can bear. You know, they can't bear it anymore. And they'll, for instance, take up self-destructive behaviors or even kill themselves. You see somebody that's in such grief and such sorrow and such a downward spiral of depression. And they say, well, they killed that person, killed themselves. Obviously, that's not true. God gave them more than they could bear. I thought we'd discuss this week. And remember, when we discuss these things, I'm not claiming to be like some learned biblical expert. These are just things I've come to understand and I believe, if I may be so bold, that God has given me some understanding of it. And as I work through these things, I try to share them with y'all in hopes that maybe it'll help y'all to understand these things. I do believe this saying has a certain amount of truth, but it has to be understood in the correct context. Understand that not everything that's bad that happens in your life is like God is making it happen. And this falls into the mistake that we've talked about before, where people have this imagination that God is like micromanaging their lives, and every single thing, every single minute thing that happens in their lives is somehow God's will, when in reality, it's simply life. For instance, how do you tell a man, if a man wakes up one day and everything is fine in his life, and then later that day, his entire family are in a horrible car accident and he loses his entire family and they're all killed and he's left alone to suffer this grief. How do you tell a man like that? Oh, well, this is God's will. Jesus took him. God has brought this about so that you can learn something. It's kind of a twisted take on the book of Job, where they were accused that these bad things happened because Job must have done something wrong. You get this similarly twisted but in a different direction narration that people will give that says that God has done this so that you can do something, so that you can learn something. But the reality is his family were just in the wrong place at the wrong time and were in an accident and they were killed. God does not micromanage our life. And likewise, when bad things happen to us and bad things, that's not necessarily, oh, God is doing this to you. I think that's important to understand, because depending on what the situation is, you could really, instead of your faith growing and relying on the Lord and finding comfort in him, you could quickly grow to resent him. In our example we just cited, if your family just got wiped out and killed, you know, why did you do this, God? If you have this idea that God has brought this about, oh, it's God's will, be like, why, Lord? You know, my babies are all dead. I'm now alone. And now what? Why did you do this, God? But again, God didn't do it. It's simply just life. And we have to understand that. We have to understand these things in their proper context. Look, things just happen. And not every bad thing and not every good thing is God micromanaging your life. You're just going through your life. You're making your decisions and you're trying to understand the Lord as you walk in your faith, and you're trying to get closer and you're trying to do this work in him. So what about this saying that we've heard our whole lives? The Lord will not give us more than we can bear. I think the way to understand this saying in its correct context is to think about it in terms of God instructing us. Because again, I do. I think these old sayings that are handed down have truth to them. That's why they're handed down. If they were BS, then they would be quickly discarded because they don't hold up truth. When you have these sayings that are passed down, they're passed down because they have an element of truth to them. Like I said, when the good Lord helps those who help themselves, it has an element of truth. As long as you keep the wheels moving and keep moving forward, I do think, and you're in your faith and you're walking, God will bless your efforts at some point. But if you just stop, you just throw up your hands and stop and quit moving forward, you're never going to get anywhere with that. Thus, you find that element of truth. Now, as we focus on the idea that the Lord does not give us more that we can bear, if we put this in the context, instead of whipping that out every time something bad happens in our lives and using it as basically a framework of, well, you have to accept this because God's doing this to you. You know, how do you accept that God loves you, but your family just all got killed in a car wreck? How do you tie that together? How does that make any sense? And how does that in any way shore up your faith. You're supposed to grit your teeth and say, well, I still love the Lord, and he killed my whole family in a car. Right? That doesn't make any sense. And I think it's disingenuous. It's like people that'll stand up there at a courtroom and talk about they forgive the guy who came in and shot all his family in a robbery, and I forgive him and ask the court to show lenience. That's nonsense, and it's not real. We have to understand what these things mean. We don't want to lie to ourselves. If your family's wiped out in a car wreck and you say, I accept this, I love the Lord, and he did this to me so that I can learn. And the other problem with that too is it could cause you, if you start internalizing it that way, you start somehow blaming yourself. You know, if your family being killed in a car wreck is somehow God putting this burden on you, then in a way, you're the reason they died in a car wreck. And it's easy to understand, but you have to understand in an example such as this, and it could apply it to whatever somebody might be going through. You know, people aren't necessarily thinking logically. You're going to be very emotional, and your mind is going to be very clouded. It's going to be hard to, you know, you're trying to find a way to process what has happened. And to think of it that way, you could indirectly wind up blaming yourself. If this happened because God has given me this burden and I've got to figure out a way to bear it, but don't worry, he's not going to give me more than I can bear, then you can start internalizing it as your family being killed in the car wreck is actually indirectly your fault because this is the burden God has given you to bear. So I really, you know, it's very important that we try to understand these things. And not just for ourselves. You may run into somebody that's struggling with this, and they might be asking you, they might be going through a great tragedy or a very trying time, and they might be like, why is God giving me this burden? You can be like, well, maybe he's not. I mean, maybe this is just life. Now, I realize people that tell someone like that and attempt to comfort them with, look, the Lord ain't, I know this is bad, but the Lord ain't going to give you more than you can bear. They're attempting, you know, to help somebody out, to try to give them some faith that somehow, you know, this is God's doing. But I think you run the danger with that of having the opposite effect, where possibly you can tell them, look, we have to keep moving forward. That is what God has given us. We've all got, what do I want to say? We've all got the mission in life, for lack of a better term, of continuing to move forward, because we're in this temporal realm and we move forward and we mature spiritually. We've all got to keep moving forward. But I think in some ways it might be more helpful to that person to look, God didn't do this to you. You know, Jesus didn't swoop down and crash the cars together so he could snatch your family out. This is just life. I could die before I get done recording this show and you may never hear it. That's life. You know, and it just is. And I think being truthful, the truth is always the answer. I think being truthful at the end is going to sustain somebody more than sitting there giving them a pat on the back and saying, well, look, this is just somehow God's will that your family dead now. Does that make any sense? Now, understanding the idea, though, that because, again, I do think it's a truthful saying, the Lord doesn't give us more than we can bear. And I think the way to understand that in its correct context is understanding the Lord teaching us in our walk in faith as we grow to understand him. He gives us challenges. If you're walking in faith and you're doing the things God has given you to do, he's going to present challenges. And remember, your faith is not an emotion. It's your actions. Your confidence can get shaken. In other words, if you are taking action, and you believe and you're taking this action, you're doing this thing because you believe that this is the work God has given you to do, and you hit those times when you're like, am I wrong? Am I completely got this wrong? Am I on the wrong path? Is this not something God has given me to do? Your faith is determined by whether or not you choose to keep doing those things. Just because you're having an emotion questioning, that's not your faith. And we'll often fall into this dubious, like, Lord, forgive me, my faith is weak. But is it? If you have this horrible emotional thing going on to where you know, you're afraid that you're on the wrong path and you're questioning and maybe you got it all wrong and you think you're doing what God wants you to do, but you've got it wrong and you don't know. And yet, in the face of that, you continue to move forward and do that thing, you know, until God shows you otherwise and you're praying for understanding. But you continue, your faith, in other words, is defined by whether or not you continue down the path that you believe God has given you to do. That's your faith, your action. Your faith is defined by your deeds, not by those emotions and that doubting, because those are going to come around. And if you define your faith by that, you're going to constantly feel as though your faith is shaken and calling into question, but it's not. Your confidence is shaken and calling into question, but your faith is clearly defined as the actions that you take. As long as you're continuing that, you're like, well, I'm not sure. And I hope God would, Lord, I pray that you'll show me clarity to make sure I'm doing the right thing and so on and so forth. But until then, I'm going to keep doing this because I do think this is what you want me to be doing. That's your faith. So you're holding in your faith. In fact, your faith is demonstrated and uplifted by the fact that in the face of this emotional turmoil, you're continuing to do what you're supposed to do. So as we walk in our faith, God is always going to give us a challenge because we're supposed to be growing. And then it's never fun. And we never want it. But this is our spiritual growth. This is how we mature. And this, too, is a sign that God isn't, that we're on the right path and God is instructing us. God will put up obstacles. God will give us challenges. And as we learn and overcome those challenges and seek Him and fumble our way through and screw up and redo it and try to figure it out, we eventually learn. We learn from this and we grow in our faith and we mature. I think the best way to think about it is if you, let's say you were teaching, let's say you're homeschooling your kids and they're on a third grade level. Now, you're teaching them basic arithmetic, you know, plus, minus, maybe starting to flirt a little bit with multiplication and division, but you're teaching them basic arithmetic. Now, you fast forward and now your kids are at the seventh grade age. They're at the age where they would be in like seventh grade. Are you still going over 2 + 2 = 4 with them? And you're like patting them on the back and say, look, you're like the public school system. You're patting them on the back. Good job, little Timmy. 2 + 2, you got 100 on your math test. You're so smart. Well, no, he's not smart. He's only doing math at the third grade level and he's supposed to be at the seventh grade level. Why, you know, he's not doing well. Yeah, he can get 100 on his math test because he hasn't grown any. He got down that part, but you've never moved him on from that. You didn't do him any favors. You failed in your job. You know, at the same time, if he's on the seventh grade level of math, you're not going to drop some college senior calculus on him and say, figure this out, kid, because he's going to not figure it out. He has no chance of figuring out. He's going to get frustrated and he's going to give up. So how would you teach your now seventh grader? Well, back there at third grade, when he gets that problem, that set of obstacles, learning basic math, addition, subtraction, and whatnot. When he gets that down, what do? You move him on to the next thing, right? The next step. Okay, now we're going to start figuring out multiplication. You see, instead of having to add this up, you can do 2 × 2. And you start teaching him multiplication. And he doesn't pick it up right away. He's like, I don't understand. Well, this is how it works. And you start working on multiplication tables. You're not giving him more than he can handle, but you are giving him more than he knows. Now, you hear me? You're giving him more than he knows, not more than he can handle. If you dumped college calculus on him, that's more than he can handle. He's not going to figure that out. He has no chance of figuring that out. And that's failure on your part as a teacher. No, you're going to give him more than he can handle. Now, understand, you're seventh grader, and this is us. We would rather be getting hundreds on our test by doing 2 + 2 = 4 in the seventh grade and talking about how smart we are. That's just our human nature. We don't like suffering. We don't like challenges. We really want to be nice and cozy. We want to find a little nest and be nice and cozy where we are. And God does not let us do that as believers. We're always having to learn the next thing. And about the time we work through that and we learn the next thing and we're like, oh, I'm wrapping my mind around, I'm wrapping my spiritual mind around this. Thank you, Lord. And now I feel so much better because I understand the Lord so much better. And then you're just about the time like, oh, you take a breather. And then he presents the next thing to you. The next thing that you've got to come and understand. But you see, he just gives you that next step that you've got to grow and understand. The Lord's a better teacher than any of us, and he brings us on that way. And when you understand this in the context of the Lord teaching us, that saying makes a lot more sense. He doesn't give us more than we can handle. In other words, he's giving us the next step in understanding him and walking in our faith. We can't stay at 2 + 2 = 4 for our entire lives because then we don't know enough math to do the things we need to do. Likewise, we can't stay back at very basic Sunday school level understanding of the Lord. And now you're an adult. And I see all these people, but non-believers are one of the worst. They love to throw out their second grade tier Sunday school, but they remember and act like they know everything about the Lord and about the Bible. And this is why they don't believe in any of that. And they think they're blowing you away with their second grade tier understanding of the Bible. But worse than that is you see people who are believers and their understanding of the Bible is at about a second grade level. We are supposed to always be learning, and God brings us to that next step. Just as you would bring your child along, you give them that next challenge. They can figure it out. They don't know it now, but they can figure it out. They're going to have to work on it, and you're going to be patient. The first time you hand your third grader the multiplication tables and you say, okay, let's work through this. And they try to work through it and they get like a 20 out of 100. You don't throw the papers off the table and tell them they're a moron. What's wrong with you? No, you start explaining it. They have to work through it. This is God's grace through Jesus Christ, is because we are able to work through it. This is the grace of God through Christ. As we work through the different things we're working through, we're able to do that because of what Jesus did for us. He doesn't sling the papers off the table and tell us we're stupid. We're given the leeway so that we can work on it. Your job is to keep working on it. Don't you sling the papers off the table and say, God, I can't do this. I'm just done. Done, Lord. I don't understand. I ain't going to understand. Quit. I want to go back to doing 2 + 2 = 4. Oh, you ain't going to do that. Your job is to grow. Your job is to keep moving forward. When we think of it this way, that saying makes a lot of sense, isn't it? He teaches us in a way to where he doesn't give us more than we can handle. To understand that properly, we have to put that in the context of our walk in faith. And by our walk of faith, I mean our constant moving to understand the Lord, our constant walk as believers to understand God, to understand him, to get closer to him, to get closer to a knowledge of him. Which, remember, at the end of the day, that's the whole reason we're here. The only reason you're here on this earth, this is your opportunity, and you only get one. This is your opportunity to know the Lord and to mature as much as possible, because you are going to get birthed into the real life, into the next life, whether it's into death and hell or it's into the kingdom of God. But you are going to move on to that next step one way or the other. Death is coming for all of us. And when we do, we leave behind a husk. We call them locusts down here in Texas, but like in Japan or, you know, other places, they call them cicadas, but we call them locusts here. And, you know, you'll find those shells, you know, where they shed that thing off, and you find that husk. That's what a dead body is. Somebody walks in and they find someone dead and it's like, oh my gosh. And they freak out. It's a dead body. It's just a husk, like a locust. You see, they were born into the next life. And we're all going to do that. We're all going to 100%. There's one of those few things that's guaranteed in life. You are going to leave this life. You need to make the most of this time that you can. This is the whole purpose. All these things we get caught up in. All these things in the world around us. We have to deal with them. I'm not saying you ignore those things. But understand, every single last one of these things is just temporary. It doesn't matter. When you leave this world, you're not going to give a crap who's president of the United States or if the United States even exists. It's irrelevant. I believe that when we leave this world, as believers, I believe when we leave this world, I think one of the things that's really going to strike us is how breathtakingly meaningless all of this other stuff is. The only thing that's meaningful in this life is the work we do and our spiritual maturity. I mean, our relationships we have with other people matter too, but those are related to our growth and our spiritual maturity. Those things are interrelated. But all of this other stuff, our work, our jobs, our bills, money, and the things bills we got to pay, and drama with our coworkers, drama with family, drama with whatever political crap that we were all so focused on. We're just going to, I really do. I think that when we leave this world and when we leave that locust shell behind and we're born into the real life, I think that one of the things is just really just going to be like, shocking, is just truly, truly realizing how stupid and meaningless all of it is. It doesn't matter. Our walk and our faith is about our striving to mature, to understand, and to understand the Lord. Look, there's times that you're seeking God and you don't really feel like you're getting anywhere. Don't worry about that. Seriously, again, because what? You don't feel like the emotional element. Again, ignore that. As long as you're putting in the effort, whether you feel like you're getting anywhere or not, look, if you're putting in the effort, God will honor that effort and he will bless it because this is your work. You are striving to do what you're supposed to be doing. If you're just sitting there and you're not wanting to grow in your faith and you want to be nice and cozy in your nest, that ain't what God set before. You're going to kick you out of that nest. And trust me, he is, and you ain't going to like it. That's the way it is. The Lord will give us because he loves us. Look, when you going back to our analogy of teaching a child, you know, the child at one point being frustrated because it's hard, it's difficult, they may say, you're just being mean to me. Why do I got to learn multiplication? Why do I got to learn division? I hate this. Why are you just being mean to me? If you love me, you just let me be happy doing simple addition and subtraction. But you're not being mean to them. You want them to grow. You're teaching your child this. You're challenging them to use their minds and to grow mentally. You're challenging them to grow in their understanding because you love them. That's the whole point. If you didn't care about them, you'd be one of these people that just lets their kids run around. They don't teach them nothing. And then one day you wake up and they're grown up and they're ignorant and stupid, don't know how to act. That's the sign of parents that don't love them. You're challenging them. You're teaching them because you do love them. And likewise, the Lord challenges us and teaches us because he loves us. You see how the things we're given in life, the jobs we're given, such as teaching your children, it's not just about teaching your children. This is one of the ways in which God has given you to understand him. We see these things and we partake in these activities in life, raising your kids and teaching them about things in the world and showing them things in the world and giving them understanding. It's not just about teaching your kids. Your kids are not the only ones learning. You're learning because you're given a chance to basically, for lack of a better term, putting yourself in God's shoes. You see, God has given you that as an opportunity to understand things from his perspective. When you're teaching your kids, you're given an opportunity to understand the perspective of the Lord as he is teaching you. As we come to understand these things, it gets easier and easier, I think. Or at least you can learn to get in the habit of sifting through the things. It becomes more and more clear. I'll spit it out in a minute. That the things that matter and the things that don't. It becomes, as you walk in your faith, you get that clarity. The clarity of the things that matter and the things that at the end of the day don't matter. The things that are part of the Lord's instruction and the things that are just life, as just things, good or bad, that happens, that are just, it's just life. And when we come to understand this, we truly, then we understand as we walk in our faith and we face the challenges that are involved in this life, we can understand as we accept these challenges and as we grow and we continue to learn, then we do understand the truth behind the idea that the Lord does not give us more than we can bear. We're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you enjoyed the whole entirety of our discussion today. Of course, always the Christian specific segment. This is why I do this show. Like, I mean, if for some reason, you know, a voice came down and said, you can't do the Christian specific segment anymore, I'm done. I'm done with all of the rest of this. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoy those things too, but this is the point. For me personally, this roughly 30 minutes of this show, this is why I do all of the rest of it. I mean, I enjoy doing those other things too, the first half of the show and the Daily Nationals and all that. I enjoy those things, but this is the point. This is the point because I think at the end of the day, this is what matters. This is what matters the most. So anyway, like I say, we're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you for listening. I hope you can check all of our great content out here on Radio Albion Monday through Friday. We try to get something new up every day. So far, so good. I was thinking last night, you know, I was thinking, man, you know, what if this, that, or the other happens? I wouldn't be able to get any content up. And I'm like, I'd have to try to figure out some sort of way. And I don't know, might have to ask Dr. Johnson if he can put something extra up that day or whatever. I don't know. But we'll cross those bridges when we get there. As it stands right now, we're able to put something up Monday through Friday every week. And I'm proud of the content we do. Of course, you know, Matt Johnson stuff is always good. You know, it's always good. And I do my best in my own humble way to fill my own humble role. And so I do. I hope you all check it out. And as always, I hope you'll come check us out here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.